Hey y'all, it's Brie Bagwell with your Only Vans recap, and what an honor it is to have my friend from Alabama, Mr. Adam Hood, on the podcast today, coming to you from the really incredible 8750 festival we both played in Red River, New Mexico back in August. Peeking at his tour schedule, Adam's going to be in Illinois, Wisconsin, Texas, Mississippi, Alabama, Tennessee, Maryland, and more, so be sure to go to adamhood.com for that schedule. He's a must-see live act. We talk a lot about publishing deals on this podcast because Adam and I both had them. And if you don't know, publishing deals when you're considered a full-time writer for a company, and that's a uniquely hard place to be in. Being a road dog and an employed staff writer was a very busy and stressful and also freaking amazing time in my life. I'm glad we dove in on that. And even though we talk about how hard it was, I know we both loved it and we were lucky to be in that position. We talk about resistance from the book War of Art, gifted to me by Wade Bowen, actually. That is a must read for artists. Adam re-recorded one of his records to Own the Masters, and it sounds great. Shout out again to Gordy Quist and the Finishing School Studio in Austin, Texas. And to clarify, I did not do my own drywall in my house. That's a lie. I don't know why I said that. Thank you to one of our favorite places, the Motherlode Saloon in Red River, New Mexico, for letting us film the podcast there. Oh, and also stick around at the end of the episode to hear my conversation with the organizers of the 8750 Festival. Enjoy. Kyle Ramsey, cut this out. He said, after I'm done, I pointed my...
Yes! This.
You have to bleep my part out.
That's when I know it's good. I forgot about that.
Is that something you really say? I can't picture you saying that, but it made me laugh so hard.
I'm going to try to adopt it. I mean, I've said it. It's like manifesting it.
Yeah.
Hey, everybody. This is Bree Bagwell, and this is my podcast, Only Vans, where I talk to my friends. They love it.
I played here on the way to Steamboat. Have you played at the Motherlode?
Yes. Well, maybe. I think so. I know. So I came up here during the Red River Songwriters Festival.
Right.
And I think I had a set here. I know that like I participated in the group thing. Yeah. Yeah, I think my set was here.
The owner, Steve, we were on our way to Steamboat, and he gave us a routing date to Music Fest. And then when we left, he sent us out with a big case of liquor and wine and bottled water, and it was just nice. So thank you to the Motherlode Saloon for letting us film here at the 8750 Festival, which I am so excited because I get to have my friend Adam Hood on my podcast finally.
Finally.
I know.
I've been kind of jealous. Like, I saw Mickey was on here, and I've been like, why she asked Mickey and didn't ask me?
No, I always ask. It always depends on proximity, and we always film, you know, like in my van, yeah, in RV in New Braunfels. So it kind of, we got lucky. Willie asked to be on the podcast, and so Kyle and I drove to Austin, and then when we interviewed Willie, he was like, Mickey was there. And so then I got to do both of them
in one.
Yeah, it was really awesome. So I am thrilled. You've been at the top of our list for a long, long time.
Well, thank you.
And we've been friends for...
Call me. You kind of stop wanting to count. You know what I mean? Like, after it gets into, like, the second decade, like, you don't want to talk about it anymore. We've been friends for how long? Holy mackerel.
Over a decade.
Yeah, at least.
We were on the same booking agency for a little while.
Like, it was you and I and I think the rest of the Texas music scene for a long time. Is that where we met?
I think so. Well, I've been a fan of yours for a long time, and I used to cover 22 Days Too Long, like, before I ever even met you.
Thank you.
And, not as good as yours, but but then we were on Nick Ferrata's booking agency with Cody Johnson, Josh Ward. I mean, what a Will Clark Green, Jody Booth, what a lineup that was.
Yeah, it really was. It was kind of everybody.
And you and I, one of my favorite memories in the whole world is at Scooters in Moulton. It was like the first, I got to open up for you, and then we all played songs till like 3 or 4 in the morning.
Yes.
Remember that?
And so, okay, was Miles playing with you?
Yes, Miles Stone.
And so Alan Goodman was playing with me then.
That's right.
So that's kind of where that relationship came from.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget that gig. So they put us up in that hotel that's right in front of it, right?
Uh-huh.
Or like at the interstate exit. And so I get there, and there's about a half a dozen lawnmowers, like, kind of wheels off of them, sitting, like, sort of in front of our door. And then I go into the door. Like, we go in our room, and, like the hot water's busted. So there's like water flying out of the faucet. And I mean, I think there was a dog food bowl or something. Like it was rough. I said, we can't stay here. But they had the place, like that place above the bar.
Yeah.
Is that the only show we've done together?
I know. And we also have never written a song together.
Oh, that's sad.
When I was preparing for this podcast, I was like, this is my favorite songwriter that I've never written a song with. And I don't think it's because you don't like me. I think we are really good friends.
Correct. I'm very approachable as well.
I know.
And would definitely say yes to you. Timing is tough, though.
Yeah.
It really is. It's tough for everybody.
It is tough for everybody. But I do think maybe, so you know how you have to go to Nashville to write with all of your friends?
No.
I think that's like, sometimes like, I remember when I was at Sony, people would fly there from Texas to go write with me in Nashville, which was hilarious. Because
Why don't we just do it
yeah. when, you know.
Just at the house.
That's one of the things I was going to get you to agree to write a song with me live on this podcast so you can't ever get out of it.
Deal.
Because you were just writing with my friend Juliana Rankin the other day.
And it went great.
It did.
Yeah.
Well, you're so great. And I think like you and Bo Brumbel, everything that you write with somebody, I'm like, this is so groovy. Who'd you write that with? Adam Hood.
Thank you.
And your new Four on the Floor with Britt Cobb is like the definition of both of you and the definition of groovy.
Right.
And I mean, can you just talk about that friendship for a little bit? Because I feel like y'all been friends for a long time.
So I got a publishing deal with Carnival Music in 2010, I think. And so my publishing deal started in January of that year. Brent came in December of that year. So, and I was as far as I know, I was the first person that he wrote with in Nashville. And so, he's from Richland, Georgia area, and I'm from Opelika, so we kind of grew up about an hour from each other. And his dad's a musician and played all the places that I played around Auburn and stuff like that. So we had a lot in common. And then the first song we wrote was a song called Go Outside and Dance that Eli Young Band cut. We were off to the races pretty quick.
Wow.
And I want to say Four on the Floor was like the third song. And the cool thing is, I say the cool thing, it's just an observation for me. Like, if you get a song cut, if you and a co-writer get a song cut, you can tell that like there's a little bit more of a priority to put the two of you in a room together again, which would be my inclination as well.
Yeah.
And so like once that happened, Brent and I were writing a lot. And so Four on the Floor was probably like the third song we've written. So it's been around for a long time.
I had no idea.
Uh-huh.
That's wild. And I love the cover because you guys are just sitting playing guitars together.
Right. It's a quail plantation out there. We went and shot quails that day.
Well, that sounds like a
real redneck.
Yeah. Yeah. And what is happening with Alabama? I mean, like, it's so crazy. Taylor Honeycutt, Ella Langley, you're from Alabama. I remember just thinking that when I started in the Texas music scene that people were going to be upset that I wasn't from Texas. But I remember distinctly on radio interviews talking about Adam Hood's from Alabama, Reckless Kelly and Making the Motor Cars are from Idaho. So, and then at the time, like Turnpike was from Oklahoma. You know, they were starting to come out. So I think a lot of people in our scene are actually not from Texas, and that hasn't really been the barrier to entry like I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, it really is a lot more about the quality of your music than it is the geography, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, because, you know, Texas kind of, in my opinion, they sort of hold their music to a bit of a higher standard, you know? And for me, that standard was sort of what I kind of held myself to anyway. I had a friend that used to burn me, she would make about mixtapes of all, like, it was
like
Blue and Matt Killer. Powell.
Got it. Like, different. Okay. Yeah.
She would burn me on stage.
Sorry, continue.
No, that's fine. So, pretty early in my 20s maybe, which, God, that was forever ago, I was introduced to the Texas music scene over in Alabama. And, like, Pat and Jack Ingram came to play in Auburn a couple of times. And so, like, I was familiar, but you know how it is. Like, it doesn't matter who you experience with first, somebody grabs you. You know what I mean? There's somebody that you listen to and you go, dang, that was really good. You know, that's not your average everyday song.
Who was that for you? You were probably getting there.
Good question.
I just interrupted you.
No, you're fine.
It wasn't me, but I'm just kidding. But I think that Nashville, Texas thing, it doesn't exist anymore. And I think, I mean, especially now with what, you know, Parker and everybody has done, Kojo.
Yeah.
It's been really interesting, but everyone has always kind of paid attention to what Texas is doing, I think.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing that I got. And like, your name would come up a lot when I was in Nashville. People love Texas songwriters, and people wanted to write with you all the time because it's a unique thing, and it's different than Nashville. Do you feel like I mean, you can talk about that if you want. I'm not a Nashville hater is my point,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
But I'm glad that they're seeing the value in a writer like you who is super groovy and something like Front Porch Song that Little Big Town ended up cutting. You know, they were probably so thrilled to get a song that sounded different and wasn't in the mold of Nashville.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm conflicted about it, you know, and it's really... It's because of the fact that I sit here in my spot and I watch the day-to-day of it. You know what I mean? I sit here in my spot and have text messages ignored. You know what I mean? And here, the 98% no is my life. You know what I mean? And even, like, having success. I mean, having things.
What do you mean?
Just, I mean, you get more no's than you get yeses.
You're getting more no's?
Absolutely.
Come on.
Absolutely.
From who?
I'm
just kidding. Pretty much
everybody.
But that does surprise me.
At one point in time. Well, and exactly. And it kind of, you know, what you said kind of surprises me. You know what I mean? It's strange to me that, like, because I don't live in Nashville. I mean, I have a place there. I've been, you know, I have had two publishing deals there. I still write up there all the time. And, you know, so, I mean, I'm there and present a lot, but I don't live there. And I know because I don't live there, I miss out on opportunities, you know. But I think that's the trade-off, you know. And, I mean, because the truth is, if I lived there and made those opportunities, that would be less time with my family. And, you know, and at the end of the day, we live in Alabama because that's what's best for our kids, you know. So,
right.
I mean, but, yeah, I mean, it's I'm learning to be responsible with it as far as, like, you know, understanding that thank you for saying that. There's a stewardship that I have to have. And just, like I said, just kind of be responsible with it. Don't be a jerk. Show up on time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, come prepared. Things like that. And strangely enough, you know, I think those are the kind of things that it took me a long time. It took me a long time to get my head out of my ass and show up to co-write on time and have ideas, you know? And I don't know why. It's almost like I got a publishing deal and then I got bitter about it. You know, you know what I mean?
Well, I think it's hard because you and I are also road dogs. So
yes.
When I had my publishing deal with Sony in Nashville, I was flying back and forth every weekend and playing with my band and then mm-hmm. writing. And I think it's hard to be both of those people.
It is. That's the big difference.
Yeah.
That's what separates us from the rest of the bunch.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I had a couple of those too, where I would cancel Monday mornings. And then, you know, my publisher said, hey, you can only do this so many times before people will stop asking.
Yes.
I'm like, I know, but they didn't fly in at midnight last night.
Correct.
And have three gigs. And, and then I moved to Nashville because they said I should. And
I
because I flew back and forth 48 times in one year, 2 years in a row, every week.
Wow.
And I was killing myself a little bit.
Yeah.
I wasn't being great at a songwriter or at a stage person. You can't be 100% at both of those things.
That's pretty valuable.
And then at the end of that, you know, I kind of got the, well, she didn't network and she wasn't hanging around town. But I couldn't hang around. I literally couldn't. And so when you say things like that, I think it's hard to be the artist and the full-time songwriter. That's a tough spot.
Yeah, it really is. Like, and I'm sure you feel this way. Like, I never knew there was a difference. You know what I mean? Like, I never knew that you had to. And I see it now. You know, like, after sort of just now that we're in a day and age where, like, everything is ours to do. You know what I mean? Like, which is great, which is really liberating. And I'm the boss of me, and nobody's the boss of me. However, like, we got to do everything. We have to, like, make sure that all the songs are registered with BMI on the album, make sure the album artwork is, like, I mean, and that's just the album, not just the shows and the promotion of those and the, you know, the relationship building that kind of allows you to come back to that show after playing three times for a dead room. You know what I mean? Like, all those things, you know? So there's a lot involved, and yeah, it's a tough balance. I don't think I'm very good at it.
Wow, I always feel like I'm failing at all the things too, but you're not. Like, I can tell you from
Thank
the
you.
Outside, you're definitely not, and probably neither am I. But it is so many things, it's easy to feel like you're, because it is so much, and the people will say, you know, you signed up for this. Yeah, it's like, no, we actually, in 2001, when we started, we did not
this
sign
is
up
not
for
what
this.
We signed
is not
up for.
But it
Amen,
is,
Johnson.
You know, there is the positive
no
sides of it, like you said.
Yeah.
And shout out to Kristen at BMI for noticing that my new single that just came out was not registered at BMI.
See?
She helps me. So, but it is one thing. There's so much to remember and there's so much to do at all times. that I think, you know, with talking to you about stuff like that, I think that's kind of why we have this podcast, is to feel like we're not alone in feeling like we're not doing enough all the time. And it's just a lot to remember. It's a lot to do. And I think you're doing a great job.
Thank you.
And you're also a great dad.
Thank you.
And prioritizing family, which is a success on its own.
Well, that's what I want to do. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I would be Mr. Mom if I could, you know.
Really?
I'd be yelling at my kids, too, though. Sometimes they'd be making me mad, and I'd be yelling at them, but that's okay.
They're so cute, though. If you guys haven't seen them, and Brittany, love of my life, love of your life. That's
His wife. Home finishing the bathroom. They're finishing the bathroom as we speak.
She can do anything.
She can certainly do that stuff, and I can't do it.
So. Really?
I mean, I guess I can. There's some things that I'm sure you understand how this is. Some things you just got to get out of her way and let her do it. You know what I mean? And if she needs your help.
If you could tell that to all men slowly.
Let her do it.
Just get out of the way.
Get out of the way. Stop talking.
I've been drywalling and sealing the bathtubs and stuff. And
same thing.
I'm pretty good at it.
Really?
And I think it's because I'm patient. So there are, you know.
It is very difficult.
Yeah. Things like that are hard. But anyway, if we can sit and write a song with people that we don't like and crunch out a song that we hate for 8 hours where you're just like, what am I doing with my life? This is a weird question, but Paul and I were talking about this with Ray Wiley Hubbard the other day. But he's like, man, I love songs. I love writing songs. And it's like, to me, it's like going on a run. I don't love it, but I love it at the end.
The initial motivation is really difficult.
You do feel like
absolutely, that? Absolutely, yeah. And it is. It's with other people too, you know. And it's nothing against them. It's just kind of the, I think they said something about this in like the War of Art, talking about kind of the tug of war, that sort of just this natural tendency to not do the things that you really need to be doing.
Resistance.
Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah. Thank you very much. So, yeah, I mean, and that's, it happens all the time. It happens when I have an idea for a song. It happens when people send me ideas for songs. It happens when I got a writing appointment. But at the same time, just like you said, there's nothing more rewarding in my line of work than finishing a song. It's my favorite thing to do.
That's great to know that you feel like that. Because sometimes, even a co-write with somebody that I love, I'm like, this is going to be hard, and it's going to take a long time. And some people just don't feel like that, but I do, and I'm so glad to not be alone in that journey. Do you still have a publishing deal right now? No. How long were you with Carnival?
I was with Carnival for 7 years. Then I got out. I was by myself for a year, and then I signed with Low Country Sound, which was Dave Cobb's company, for 5.
Right.
And that was January 2021 was when I finished my deal with them.
Publishing deals are kind of like a love-hate for me in a sense. Like, I'm sure, I don't know, but I really liked that security of that money.
Yeah.
But then the pressure to write something that sells is harder than I think people imagine. And it's not, I never felt comfortable with just take the paycheck and if it happens, it happens. It was like I was always feeling the pressure of writing a great song and making their money back.
Yeah.
You know, it's like someone's investing in you and there's no guarantee of the outcome.
None.
Yeah.
It's very unlikely that this will work out.
This is a terrible investment.
Exactly. Well, and if it makes you feel any better, it makes you put your head down the pillow a little bit better. Nobody's making money at publishing anymore. So you don't have to worry about taking the check because nobody's getting checks
anymore. Right. Because if you don't know anything about, you know, people would tell me when I moved to Nashville, if you got a song on Garth Brooks' record, you were a millionaire. And so was the publishing company. If it was never a single. If you got a song on the record that nobody even liked. Like, that's wild. And that's just not what happens anymore.
However, you know, no, it's not. And I think that's the thing that people kind of take for granted. Especially, like, Garth Brooks is probably a bad example of that because he kind of owns everything. And so, like, you know, there may be more coffers of money. And Garth Brooks may be one of those people that's like, I mean, you know, just a little more generous with this money or something like that. I don't know, you know, but at the same time, I know what you mean. Like, it was always like a number one is this amount of money and you know, a top five is this amount of money. I never saw any of that stuff. But, you know, we never really pushed the singles, you know. And I realized that I'm not a radio songwriter. You know what I mean? Like, it was kind of something that you know, it's one of those things where you get into this and you go, okay, well, I'm going to – y'all sign me. This, you obviously want me to do what I do. So you do what you do for a couple of years, and you write some good songs, and it's okay. But then you realize, man, you know, like, not – like, this is – you know, not – no one's grabbing these to put it on a chart. Nobody's making a single out of these. You know what I mean?
Right. Even though they're like, I really love this.
Yeah. It's the 90%.
It won't ever be on the radio.
But exactly.
But then here comes Chris Stapleton who sounds, you know, who puts out a song that, you know what I mean? And then it hits and everyone's like, we knew it was a hit. It's like, you would never put that on the radio. You would
have
totally.
I've been knowing it for years.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Same old so crap. I think that what you write is like, whenever, you know, we put on some today and it was just like immediately groovy, immediately like makes you nod your head.
I don't understand
why that wouldn't be on the radio, but I've never really understood anything about the music business, so it doesn't matter.
Right, exactly.
Hey, this is Bree Bagwell, and if you want to listen to this podcast early and ad-free, subscribe to my Patreon at www.patreon.com/BreeBagwell.
Howdy, y'all. It's Bree Bagwell, and I know y'all support the people who support me, so let me tell you about Deep Ellum Brewing Company. Born and raised in Deep Ellum, Texas, Deep Ellum Brewing Company has really made its mark on the beer world. Known for its flagships, Dallas Blonde and Deep Ellum IPA, they put boring beers to shame with a full lineup that's unapologetically not brewed to style. My personal favorite is the Dallas Blonde. It is so easy to drink. I just took it home for the holidays, and my whole family was like, obsessed with this beer. No joke. They drank it all. Thanks a lot, family. So head over to deepellumbrewing.com to open the beer vault and give your fridge what it deserves. And you'll see why love runs deep for Deep Ellum Brewing Company. Available in Texas and Oklahoma, side effects may include severe happiness. Deep Ellum Brewing Company products are for individuals 21 and older, and we encourage drinking responsibly. Are you ready to take your merchandise to the next level? Well, just ask me who I use, and that is CH Lone Star Promo. They specialize in screen printing and direct-to-garment, embroidery, laser engraving, anything promo-related, they can do it. Step up your merch game now with CH Lone Star Promo and tell them Breen Whiskey sent you. Just this is how it's always been.
And it's, you know, and there's politics involved and there's relationships and there's all the things that happen with any other line of work. There's a pecking order. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, but when I realized that hit songs weren't going to be what I do, that was my next goal was like, okay, well, I want to be the guy that if you need this, Adam's the guy to call.
And you have done that. Like, you have absolutely done that. Or also, if you want to be the guy that all of us are like, that's a songwriter, or songwriter.
Yeah.
Like, you're that person, too. Where, like, you know, Miranda Lambert, you're one of her favorite songwriters. Like, that's a big deal.
That's a pretty big deal.
Yeah. And she's like, what did she just say? I'll just sing on your record. She just said, yeah, right.
Yes, yeah. She kind of... I mean, she, for all intents and purposes, discovered me, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, she got me my job at Carnival.
Right. And her, Bev and Rick have got me my publishing deal at Sony.
Exactly.
So it's
very useful. I mean, they're wonderful people. Very
wonderful people who probably wouldn't want us telling everybody how wonderful they are, because that's not why they do it.
Here's their address. They're so good. Here's their address and their email address.
Yeah. They just kind of helped me and you because they liked us.
Exactly.
Which is so... I can't even believe that's my life. Really.
It's what everybody needs. Everybody needs that at some point in time, you know?
And at Mile Zero last year, it was really cold and rainy and awful, and I was playing at the pool outside, and it was freezing. And it's never like that. It's always perfect. It was a freak day. And I was so upset because it's usually a big party, and Bev and Rick Lambert were there, and I was like, and Max and Heather Stalling were there. And I thought...
That's pretty nice.
It's okay.
Thanks for coming,
because if these four people are here supporting me, I really need that in my life.
Yeah.
And we have to keep those wins. Did my
dog
die? Is she okay? Thanks. she's being so mad. She's been in the car all morning, and then poor Adam Hood is like, what is this podcast? It's so unprofessional.
I don't care.
He's like, this isn't your van.
This isn't a van.
Yeah, but he's thankful because you've been in a van. Where have you been on the way here?
So the guys live in Nashville. The band lives in Nashville. We live in Tuscaloosa. So if we're on the I-20 side of things, I-10 side of things, they can drive through and pick me up. So they pick me up about 8 o'clock Wednesday night. We went to Lindale, stayed in Lindale.
Oh.
Yeah, and then got up in the morning and drove to Lubbock, played the Blue Light.
You played the Blue Light last night?
Yes, and got in the car and drove here like after the show.
Oh, no. You got your road dogs with you then.
Had enough.
I mean, yeah, that's a lot of road time. And it's harder the older we get. I mean, I kind of think about when we were doing it back in the day. We were really doing it, but we were younger. And the older you get, the more my back starts to go, I don't know about this anymore.
It sure is bumpy in this car.
It's just,
this,
you know.
This van's bumpy.
I see you.
Well, you know, and it's just, you know, it's kind of part of it. And the thing that kind of gives me a little bit of peace about it is the fact that there's no level of travel that's comfortable. No one has figured it out. It's a pain in the neck for everybody. If you've got a fleet of buses, or you got a jet, or you got a magic carpet, there is still something that's going to be a pain in the neck to you. Nobody's mastered it. This is not bliss for anyone.
Right. And I think mainly human beings are not supposed to be in this position
not
for
this
that long.
Yeah.
And sleeping, you know, trying to sleep in different places every night, it definitely is hard, and it's a life that we choose. And I get so mad at Paul, though, because he'll be able to go hike, shower, and get ready for the show in the time that it takes me to put on my makeup. So yeah, you should be thankful that you're a man.
I am thankful when it comes to that kind of stuff. I'm kind of never stage ready, but always stage ready at the same time. You know what I mean? Like,
it's almost cooler if you're like, oh, I just rolled out of bed.
I just threw this on. I slept in this last night.
Or guys are sweaty and they look hot, and when I'm sweaty, it's like,
oh. I do not look hot when I'm sweaty.
Rat.
I look hot, like hot, like it's hot outside, obviously.
Do you remember, I don't think I should ask you this on this podcast.
I can't wait.
Do you remember Paul asked you in Steamboat, he said he was talking to you and Jason Eady, and he said, how do you know when it's a good song?
No.
You don't remember this?
What was my answer?
Guy, you have to cut this out. He said, after I'm done, I point at my
Yes! This.
You have to bleep my part out.
That's when I know it's good. I forgot about
Is
that.
Is that something you really say? I can't picture you saying that, but it made me laugh so hard.
I'm going to try to adopt it. I mean, I've said it. It's like manifesting it.
Yeah. It just made me laugh so hard. I was like, that's so funny and so something unlike I would think out of
That's what I do. But we finish the line. I stand up and I go, bam. Just done. Pin drop. Whatever.
I'm so
phone
glad.
Drop.
This has made me so happy. So that's how you know.
Exactly. Yeah.
And okay. And another thing that I feel a little bad. I didn't know exactly why you re-recorded A Different Groove.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite records. Can you tell me why? And I don't know why. I don't know why you did that. Did you just to update it or?
Yes, that.
Or Taylor Swift moment?
Kind of, okay. Yeah. I mean, it was a couple of things. We wanted the masters, and we needed an update. And I tell you the thing that was really the most frustrating for me with The Different Groove thing. I had written those songs. I'd written about... I went into the studio to record with Pete Anderson. I had four songs together, and I think it was like Late Night Diner. Mm-hmm. I had 22 Days, but it wasn't done. And then I had Fool of an Honest Man and Hotown Talking, maybe. And so
About Bree. YouTube.
Talking.
Sorry.
No, that's how that's.
I didn't mean to interrupt,
go
but I that's how I sing it.
That's pretty good. So I had those four. And where was I going?
I know I interrupted.
No, you're fine.
It's my podcast. I can
okay, so I was saying that to say that, like, I had arrangements worked out before we started production. And so and I'd been playing these songs out for people. You know, I'd been playing Late Night Diner out for a while. And so when we recorded the record and released it, you know, the first thing people said was like, why'd you change it? Well, I didn't change it necessarily. It was just an arrangement thing that was changed in the studio. It happens all the time. But it really kind of, it's not scared me, but it really made me self-conscious about it. And so I was wishy-washy about arrangements for a long time and tempos and things like that. And so okay, case in point with 22 Days, I never played the guitar part the same way twice. And it's not playing the lead part. It's just like, This is how the guitar part, the instrumental part in the middle, this is how it goes. We're all going to play it like that. Even if we decided to do that, I would change it. And I said, I can't take this anymore. And so there was that. And then Jason started recording with Gordy and those guys. And so I went to the studio and just kind of hung out. And, you know, just kind of went to pick Gordy's brain a little bit. And you know, Brittany had said a bunch, you should re-record this record for those reasons. It needed a fresh coat of paint. We needed the masters to it. And then when I met him and got the opportunity, well, when I met Gordy, I figured that if I was going to do it, those guys they're masters at breathing new life into an old song. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And it's because there's an art to that. Because you either got to do it so good, or you got to do it like whatever song it is, you got to do it so close that it's almost better, or you got to do it so different,
right,
that it's not even familiar. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's a fine line.
That's so interesting. I think it sounds amazing, and but I agree with you. If you try out songs on people, I'll say, hey, this is new. I just wrote this. Rachel Loy will always go in and make my song better than it was before we go into the studio. But then it comes out and people are like, I like the old way better. But it's just because they want to feel, I think, that they had a part of something before, right, or they knew first, which is fine. But I get really self-conscious of that too. And I think, you know, I think eventually people get over it once they hear it enough times.
They're going to have to.
But we talk about the finishing school on here like almost every time we podcast.
It's an amazing studio,
and I've sent stuff to Gordy and Bar Crow. When we interviewed Bar Crow, we couldn't remember the name of the studio. And I was on No Sleep, and Bar was on No Sleep. I mean, we were road dogging it too. Yeah. We were both like, what? But anyway, we like to shout out Gordy and that whole studio.
Yeah, man, because it's incredible.
Well, I think that sounds really great, and a lot of us, I mean, you have to take the most comfort in knowing that you are a lot of our freaking hero.
Thank you.
I really mean that. And Bo Brumbull and I talk about you all the time and how we try to do your vocal runs, and we're always trying to add them.
Oh, bless your heart, man. Oh, geez. And that's the thing, like, you know, I think about it all the time. Just like, I don't think I ever sing correctly, you know? I mean, I just, there's no notes. I don't sing melodies. I just, bleh, you know what I mean?
It is magical to watch you sing live because it's never the same twice. And
I'd be trying hard. Like sometimes.
What do you mean?
Like sometimes I'll be up there singing, and I'll hit something good, and I'll be like, ooh, and then I'll try to keep going. I'm like, wow, now I'm tired. Now my throat hurts, and we're three songs in, and I've my little bit of self confidence. I'm like Mariah Carey, yeah, and then I've blown my voice out.
We blew through this time, but you and I had a really special conversation one time about, you know, just talking about not drinking and stuff, and what the thing that I don't need drinks to sing, but dealing with talking to people afterwards gives me a lot of anxiety.
Yeah, me too.
And you put that in the song, like you put that in Harder Stuff, and it's like that is hard for people that assume that we're both extroverts, or assume, you know, or just the things that people say when you're a sensitive person, like I am too. And that part is hard for me. Right? And that part seemed hard for you too, but you put it beautifully into a song.
Thank you.
You don't have to talk about it.
But at the same time, you know, it didn't make any of it go away. The anxiety is still there, you know? And so, you know, the only thing that left was the alcohol, because it was, you know, and so that's just kind of like, you know, the trade-off, you know? Okay, well, are you willing to deal with like 30 minutes of anxiety as opposed to like jail? Or, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like whatever.
Or blowing out your voice.
Correct, exactly.
Because sometimes when you're drinking, you're not realizing how loud you're talking and how late you're staying up.
You know, waking up hungover. And like you said, I mean, man, I mean, I'm 50. I can't. My energy is very precious to me now. You know what I mean? And so it's important to at least try to feel as good, you know, naturally as good as I can. But yeah, I mean, I'm with you. It's the same thing. It's like, you know, I get off the stage and I force myself to go to the merch table. And it's usually a pleasure, you know? I mean, at the end of the day, like, you know, I mean, it's just talking to people, and that's cool, you know? But it's just, I'm with you. I'm you know, like you said, just a little sensitive and a little more, not necessarily introverted, but like, I want to do what I want to do when I want to do it. And you know what I mean? Like, if I want to be by myself, then I want to be by myself. And you can't always be by yourself.
Amen.
If that makes sense, you know what
right.
I mean?
Or if I'm in the mood to talk to people, but if you're not and you still have to do it, or you're on no sleep, or you have to sometimes, you know, the last time we did it, I knew we had to roll in like 4 hours. Mm-hmm. So every time I talked to somebody, I was getting the anxiety of, okay, you're stealing the only sleep that I'm going to have. They don't know that.
Correct.
But it is so hard on your body, and Please.
It really builds up an anxiety, though.
Yeah.
I know what you mean.
Don't tell us we look tired. We know. We are tired.
Did they tell you that?
Oh, I get it a lot. Ask Kyle.
You always look great.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
See, people, well, what's next? And then we'll let you go because you got a sound check.
Okay, well, here's what I'm doing. So we're working on this, and it may not come to fruition, but we're in the works for a record that's going to be a record of duets. And basically the duets are going to be the songs that the artist recorded, me and the artist singing them.
Oh, my gosh. Like
Miranda.
Whiskey Myers.
Riley Green. I asked Cody.
Cody
he
Jinx?
He didn't say, no, Cody Jinx is going to
okay.
do it. I asked Cody Cannon with yeah. Whiskey Myers, and he didn't say no. He didn't say yes.
We're going to call him out on this podcast.
We should, exactly.
Because not all of us got an Adam Hood cut.
I know.
So.
And they got like three or four of them.
Right. Okay, sorry. So Miranda, yeah, Cody Jinx. That's so funny.
Miranda, Riley, Jinx, Muscadine, Drake.
Taylor. Did you write that song with Taylor?
Taylor recorded that song. I'm doing seven, so I'm missing cool. two people.
Ray Bagwell.
Ray Bagwell?
Whatever. Well, that's awesome. That's yeah. going to be incredible.
Thank
and like
you.
Everything else you do, it's going to be wonderful. And I wish every time we drove around and listened to Adam Hood and we were all in our feels and happy or grooving or whatever, that you know, hopefully through the airwaves you feel that love.
I do. I appreciate it. I mean, really, it's encouraging. It's good to know. It's good to be told these kind of things
yeah.
every now and then.
Well, yeah. I'll tell you every day.
Okay, deal.
And tell Brittany I love her.
I sure will.
Go have a great show today. We can't
Thank
wait.
Thank you, ma'am.
I'll be there. Thanks.
Thanks.
Sorry about my dog. Damn it. And I hit the microphone.
Like my vices, empty pockets, red beans and rices. Don't need no woman, tie me down. Roly-poly, rolling around. Lord, this ain't nothing you ain't heard before. Four on the floor.
Okay. Awesome. Hey, everybody, this is Brie Bagwell with the Only Vans podcast, and I brought whiskey out this morning, too. I'm here at the 8750 Barbecue Cook-Off and Music Festival, and I'm having the time of my life, so I figured that I would, like, scramble with the owners to make you just... I know you're stepping away from your festival. You guys are so busy, so thank you so much, but if you want to just introduce yourselves really quick to everybody.
So, my name is Charlie Wenger, and this is my wife, Nicole Ream. And we're not the owners. We are the coordinators, planners. Steve Hagelin and his family are the owners.
Oh, see, look, that, just like I told you, we're not professional, but we get the job done. Well, thank you for coordinating this. Did you guys just pick a lineup of literally all of my favorite bands? Is that what you did? You went inside Brie Bagwell's head and were like, we're going to get everyone from Dallasboro to Summer Dean to Cody Canada. Like, is that what you did?
Yeah, basically.
it's definitely the best part of the job, for sure.
Yeah, I love it. And I don't ever want to make it about females because I feel like the best acts should just win. But I want to say you guys have like some of the most females that I've ever seen on a festival.
Thank you very much. That is a priority for us.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's so awesome. So who are you most excited? Well, I can't say that. I can't say who are you most excited to see, but I guess when you're curating this type of festival, what kind of music do you try to get a variety, or do you try to get something for everybody, or I guess talk about what people could expect when they come to this festival?
I think a lot of it, we have so many like pals that we're like, we want to have them here for the weekend, and so that's like a big joy for us. But then we do try and kind of curate for different audiences, and there's folks that have been coming to Red River to see people for 30 years, and so we try and like make sure they have something to see, and then some up and comers. We love to like find people that, you know, people around here haven't heard of.
Yeah, it seems like you did a great job at that. And can you talk about the different venues that you have here?
Sure. We've got we start everything off. Well, this year we added a new thing. We started a show on Wednesday night for anyone who wants to come at the Motherlode Saloon, the oldest dance hall west of the Mississippi, to my understanding.
Oh, my gosh.
Thursday night, we have a dinner show. That's our big official kickoff for everyone. That's up at Bitter Creek Ranch, a couple miles out of town, where Steve Hagelin has made his home. They've got this amazing amphitheater that backs up to a little private lake. We give you a barbecue dinner with that. Then we come back down to the Mother Lode Saloon for a couple more sets. Friday morning, we get out to the park. The park, we have sets all afternoon, and then we go back to the Mother Lode at night for a couple more shows. Saturday, we kind of repeat the process, except that is the day where the cook-offs are actually cooking and turning in. There's a People's Choice category. There's all kinds of amazing free samples out there. And then we wrap up Saturday night at the Mother Lode. Sunday morning, we have a little wind down for whoever's still around up at the top of the mountain.
It is such a gorgeous place. I mean, I'm from New Mexico, so I'm a little biased, but my band got here yesterday and they were like, oh my gosh, this is so magical. And I know I can say it a million times, but unless you've been to this area, you kind of can't feel it until you get here. And so I encourage people, if you guys want to go to a destination festival, you will.
Here's why I accidentally say Taos, but I mean Red River.
Absolutely love Taos. This whole area of New Mexico, it just is kind of has like a healing power to it or something. Am I right about that?
Yeah, it's just the blue skies and the puffy clouds and the mountains and the trees. It's like, it's hard to get this in a lot of places because we are so small and sort of isolated. So it feels really special here, I think.
And not hot.
Yes. I mean, I'm wearing a jacket in August and then I'm going back to Texas tomorrow and I'm like, oh, it's going to hit like a brick wall. And then last thing I want to talk about is the cook-off. Can anyone enter that? And green chili cook-off, like, come on, right up my alley.
Yes, anyone can enter. We have online registration available until a couple days before the festival. And then if you find out late, you can still show up with it in hand day of. So pretty much anyone can enter as long as you're up to the challenge.
Yeah, it's the largest, it's the only Lone Star Barbecue Society sanctioned event outside of Texas. Is that right?
Yes, that is correct. It's also one of only two state champion, official state championship barbecue cook-offs, which I know for the guys trying to get qualified for the national is a big deal compared to getting drawn out of the big pool of state championships in Texas.
Okay. See, I didn't know any of that. I just know that I'm going as soon as my set is done to sample as much as I possibly can. And I've been invited by a bunch of the cook-off teams to come try their stuff. Everyone's been so nice. The crowd here is just really, really nice people. And I think you guys have done a great job. The hospitality, everything's so top-notch. So I know it's been a busy week for you guys, but thank you for chatting with me. And 8750festival.com.
Yes.
And next year, you got to come if you're not here. And if you're already here and you're watching this, come back. They're going to come back. It's a no-brainer, right?
I hope so.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Well, thanks for joining me, you guys. Now I have to go sing. Okay, bye.